Former New York Times drama critic Walter Kerr, a major force in American theater for more than three decades, died yesterday after a long illness. He was 83. Kerr's wit, scholarship, and vivid writing style had earned him a Pulitzer Prize and the highest accolade Broadway could give him, a theater named in his honor. Critic Bob Mondello has an appreciation.
Walter Kerr was many things: erudite, clever, an expert on classical drama, and a theater enthusiast who could make you feel you were there with him on opening night. But the thing that set him apart for me when I was 12 years old and discovering both him and the theater for the first time was that he knew how to grab an audience. He wrote the best first sentences in all of theater criticism. Like, for instance, "There are at least six things that will interest you in Sweet Charity: the dances, the scenery, the songs, Gwen Verdon, Gwen Verdon, and Gwen Verdon." Here's another. "Like the characters in Tennessee Williams's Seven Descents of Myrtle, who were prepared to cling to the roof for dear life while floodwaters rose through the house, I was prepared to cling to the play." Openings like that made it almost necessary to read the next paragraph, and once Kerr had you involved in his argument, he rarely let go. Most criticism today is prescriptive. Reviewers tell you either to go to a play or not. Kerr's criticism did that because editors and playgoers required it, but his method was mostly descriptive. He painted a picture of the experience he'd just had in the theater and let you savor it with him. Take the way he approached Cabaret on opening night in 1966. His first two sentences in the New York Times dispensed with the to-go-or-not-to-go question with his characteristic flair. "Cabaret," he wrote, "is a stunning musical with one wild wrong note. I think you'd be wise to go and argue about that startling slip later." Deep in the piece, you discovered that he thought the leading lady was miscast, but not until he'd wrapped you up in the evening's first image.
Welcome and bienvenue. Welcome.
Master of Ceremonies Joel Grey, he wrote, bursts from the darkness like a tracer bullet, singing us a welcome that has something of the old Blue Angel in it, something of Kurt Vile, and something of all the patent leather nightclub tunes that ever seduced us into feeling friendly toward sleek entertainers who twirled canes as they worked. Mr. Grey is cheerful, charming, soulless, and conspiratorially wicked. In a pink vest with sunburst eyes gleaming out of a cold cream face, he is the silencer of bad dreams, the gleeful puppet of pretended joy, sin on a string. After that, most of Kerr's readers may well have been halfway out the door to buy tickets, and this was a mixed review. Kerr began writing criticism at the age of 13 as a way of getting free movie tickets in Evanston, Illinois. Even in his first published review of a silent film, you can sense his enthusiasm as well as his budding concern for his readers. "Taxi, Taxi," he wrote, "is a picture you won't like a second time. You'll enjoy it the first time, but the second time you'll find it dry and stale. So if you intend to see it, stay only for one show." Kerr rarely followed that advice. He went back and back, practically memorizing scenes from his favorite Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton movies, which allowed him much later to write the definitive text on them, The Silent Clowns, a book calculated to move audiences to tears of laughter. After getting a master's degree in theater, he joined the drama department at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., teaching classics from Euripides to Shakespeare, and he wrote and directed shows that, against all odds, were sometimes picked up for production on Broadway. Even after 1951, when he became the theater critic for the New York Herald Tribune, he continued writing shows with his wife Jean Kerr, author of Please Don't Eat the Daisies. Shows like the 1958 musical Goldilocks, which starred Don Ameche and Elaine Stritch, and managed a five-month run by championing the thing that Kerr loved best, showbiz.
No tears for me, boys. I'll tell you what I'm going to be, boys. The perfect lady, the way I planned.
So give a little lady a great big hand.
Ragtime, I'm through now. No honky-tonk piano will do now. It's Bach for me at the baby grand.
So give a little lady a great big hand.
I'm through.
Kerr was attacked in some quarters for being overly enamored of light entertainment. He found Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot off-putting, for instance, much as audiences did, and since the consensus later was that it was one of the century's most important plays, some other critics never let him forget it. There's no question that he was most effusive when writing the critical equivalent of love letters to the stars of the 40s and 50s. Describing Carol Channing's larger-than-life features, he wrote of mascara to swim in and a nobly tragic mouth. Broadway belter Ethel Merman was an itch that can't be scratched, a brush fire claiming a whole mountainside. But by the late 1960s, when Kerr came to the New York Times, the commercial theater was in serious trouble. The Broadway musical was looking tired. Playwrights were deserting in droves for Hollywood, and Broadway itself was run down. So when he couldn't find much of interest in his usual haunts, Kerr started going to performing garages and tiny off-Broadway lofts, where drama sometimes had to be found between the lines or even in evenings that didn't have lines. His academic background allowed him to see in the gropings and howlings of the barefoot companies he found there a link to the theater of the ancient Greeks. And since he could make that connection vivid for audiences, the commercial theater had something to rebuild with. Though Kerr will certainly be remembered for his love of the theater, he was no pushover when a show was inadequate. He opened one review in the 1950s with a three-word put-down that is one of the best puns ever committed to print in a theater critique. The play was the one on which Cabaret was based, John Van Druten's I Am a Camera. Kerr's review began, "Me no Leica." L-E-I-C-A. He almost didn't have to write another word. And in his columns, he could be wonderfully wry. For instance, he wrote of a misbegotten 1950s drama, "There once was, and for a very short time, an exhibit on Broadway called A Red Rainbow. Its title required some explanation. The red, I believe, stood for communism. The rainbow stood for the light in the heavens on the day communism took over. The audience stood for more than can possibly be imagined." As influential as Kerr was, one of the decisions that most endeared him to the theater community was his decision to dilute his power as the chief drama critic of the New York Times. After 1 year as the paper's daily critic, he turned over those chores to others and began writing Sunday think pieces about the theater that were part review, part philosophy, many of which have been collected in books with titles like Journey to the Center of the Theater, Tragedy and Comedy, and God on the Gymnasium Floor. Lovely, evocative ruminations on the ideas behind the theater pieces he was seeing, or about the state of the theater, or about dramatic history. They found fascination in the margins of bad plays and in the grace notes of good ones. I grew up reading those columns, as did many of the most prominent theater artists and theater critics working today in America. For years, I modeled my own prose on them, striving to make the connection with the audience that Kerr made so effortlessly. The Times once printed a letter to the editor concerning a piece Kerr had written from London about the then new play, Equus. The letter was from an elderly woman who lamented that she could no longer travel and so would probably never be able to go to England to see Peter Schaffer's Equus, but that in the Sunday Times she'd seen Walter Kerr's Equus, and it moved her. Higher praise can't be offered a critic. Kerr earned it every time he wrote a column. I'm Bob Mondello.